Hello and welcome. We are having our musculoskeletal system topic, and it's actually the structural systems of the body. It's the pieces that we can see and feel and touch versus looking at your digestion and your neurotransmitters and things that we really can't see and feel and touch. So the structural system would be the musculoskeletal system, the skin, the hair, and the nails. And the teeth fall in there too. We'll talk about those a little bit. I consider those part of the musculoskeletal system. So I'm excited to be here and share this. I've got a lot of training and background in this area, and it was a challenge to figure out what do you really need to know. And there's a lot of places where we could go into a lot more detail, but I want to make sure that we cover the basics, because you're going to get people coming in that may be coming in for a certain reason, maybe not musculoskeletal related, unless you're a chiropractor or a massage therapist. They may be coming in for something that is not related to that, but what's happening is you're hearing when you're doing their complete history, of course, that they have some of these things going on. And there's a lot of ways that we can intervene from a nutritional standpoint. So I want to make sure that you're aware of that. And for me, from my perspective, when people would come to see me because they had a back pain or a neck pain or whatever, I would always tell them right there on the first visit that, hey, I'm going to work on your back, of course, and we'll do some therapies and we'll do some manipulations. But a lot of times these things won't clear up unless you address the underlying nutrition and biochemistry. So we'll talk about how all that stuff fits in. And then I'll give you some resources where you could go for more information about some of the more hands-on structural types of things that can be done. So information in this presentation, again, is not medical advice. And when you're working with somebody, it's never medical advice. It's always about you helping them to balance their choices, their diet, their lifestyle, their movement, their exercise, so that they can overcome problems. So just making sure that you don't diagnose or treat, you evaluate, educate, and give them guidelines. So that's what that's all about. So what are we going to cover today? We're going to look at bones. We're going to look at muscles. On the bones area, we're going to look at things like osteoporosis, because it's a really important piece, and that's something you're going to see all the time. You're going to see people, when, especially if you're dealing with a population of people over 40, you're going to hear all the time, I had my bone density checked, osteoporosis, osteopenia. But even in the younger population, we'll talk about ways that you can help to nourish and inform people so that they don't go down the road of having osteoporosis. We're going to look at teeth and give you some guidelines for natural teeth care that you could share with your clients. We'll look at skin, hair, and nails. Because a lot of people are more motivated by appearance and vanity, the skin, hair, and nails are pieces that you could use as a way to get them engaged and motivated to make some of the changes that you want to have them make. Because they may be thinking, oh, you know, preventing cancer, I'm not going to get cancer. That's not real. But, oh, making my hair look gorgeous, right? Or adrenal fatigue, whatever. Yeah. That's not a problem I have. But oh, I want my hair. My hair's falling out. As soon as the hair starts falling out, then they start to take notice. So you're going to find that to be, not with everybody across the board, but you will definitely find that to be the case in a lot of ways. So let's begin. So let's start. I always like to start with when we're dealing with these things, what can go wrong? We're going to look at how the musculoskeletal structural pieces of the body work, but I want to start out with what can go wrong, because this is what people are going to come to you with. They may not come to you with injuries, but you may find in looking at them that they have an injury. And that injury can be affecting not just their experience of pain and lack of movement and dysfunction, but they may be experiencing it as an additional load on their already stressed out adrenals, which might be contributing to their experience of fatigue, low energy, right? Imbalances with their sex drive and other hormones. So injuries are an important part, and you'll get at this when you do a history. Pain, spasm, and inflammation, either from an unknown cause or from a cause, but that's a very common complaint that people have. They have pain here, they have inflammation here, they have a spasm and, you know, lack of movement in various areas. Arthritis, very common and very commonly tied to not just the musculoskeletal structural pieces, but to underlying imbalances in the nutritional system, as well as things like food allergies and nutritional deficiencies and excesses. Autoimmune disease, right? Your body starts attacking. There's some diseases where the body attacks the collagen tissue. There's diseases where the body is affecting and attacking bony tissue, or autoimmune diseases that might affect the thyroid, which then would affect in turn the bone. Celiac disease, autoimmune disease, gluten intolerance, where gluten actually eats away at the bone, that attack can eat away at the bone. So it's really important, again, regardless of where their symptoms lie, that you're able to identify and isolate and ask questions about these things, which goes back to the importance of taking a good history. Infection, very commonly, bone infections are common. Myositis, infections of and inflammation in the muscles, not uncommon. Certainly infections in the skin and hair follicles, very common. Hair loss, and hair loss could be of a number of origins. Hair loss can be a problem with the thyroid gland or the adrenal glands. It could be a problem with the scalp itself. It could be nutrient deficiencies. So we'll look at some of those things. Brittle nails, very common. Brittle nails are a sign of underlying nutritional imbalance. And then tooth decay. And tooth decay, you know, most tooth decay is probably preventable. We all have their genetic tendencies towards, you know, weak or strong teeth. But quite frankly, it's more related to that early childhood development and the types of foods that kids are eating and the imbalances that they have. And that leads to problems with teeth. So those are the things that we'll look at in terms of what can go wrong with this musculoskeletal system. So the musculoskeletal system is in charge of movement and structure. The bones make you stand up, right? Without the bones, you'd just be a pile of flesh and a pile of organs laying on the ground. The bones give you structure. And then there's the underneath between the bones and the muscles is fascia. It's a layer of connective tissue that connects the muscles to the bones. And when you look at like therapies like Rolfing, they get in there and they work that deep. They go under the muscle and get into releasing adhesions and things in the fascia. And then finally, we have the muscles. And the muscles are what give us movement. So structure comes from the skeleton. Movement comes from the muscles. The muscles contract and relax. And the muscles move the bones. So you get, if somebody say, well, my bones are out of alignment, I need to have my bones put back into alignment. And there's a lot of chiropractic and other hands-on therapies that will say, you just have to adjust the bones and put them back in place. But in reality, it's the muscles that move the bones out of place. And so if you just move bones back into place without addressing the muscles, you can soon find that the bones are pulling out of place. There's some basic terminology that you may want to understand right from the beginning. A dislocation is a gross misalignment at a joint of one bone being shoved away from another. Generally, it comes about as a result of a trauma. So if you fall on your elbow, you can dislocate your elbow, meaning the alignment between the bones is not right. And it's grossly malformed. If you looked at an x-ray, you would see it. Another term that's used a lot is subluxation, and you see that used a lot in chiropractic. And that's a very subtle misalignment that may not even be easily seen on an x-ray, but it's a subtle misalignment and poor movement between the articulations where the bones come together. Articulation is another name for joint, and it's basically where the bones will come together. They articulate with each other. We have some other basics that we should talk about because people get confused about, well, what's a tendon versus a ligament? So we've got the muscles, and the muscle has, you could see it's, you know, the red, orangey kind of colored pieces on the third diagram there. And the muscles contract and relax. At the end of the muscles is non-contractile tissue called tendons, and that's what attaches the muscle to the bone. So the muscle's only going to be attached to the bone in certain places. You'll often hear them called the origin and the insertion. Okay, I don't like having to remember, I remember having to study the origins and the insertion. What's the origin? What's the insertion? And basically they're connections. And origin at one end of the bone, insertion at the other. And I don't quite frankly think it's important that you have to memorize which one is the origin and which one is the insertion. But they're basically origins and insertions. So it's where the tendon attaches to the muscle, where it's part of the muscle, it's an outgrowth from it, and then attaches that to the bone. So that when that muscle contracts, it moves it. So generally, if you've got a muscle overlaying a particular bone, let's just say the top part of the leg, which would be femur, the top part. And you have a muscle called the quadriceps, which is going to extend the calf, right? So that you extend the leg to a straight position. Well, in order for that muscle to do that, the tendon has to cross the joint and attach to the bone on the other side, right? So that's basically how that works. And then contract the muscle, which means shortening of the muscle, which causes the tendon to pull on that bone and the bone to move. That's it in a nutshell, really brief overview, which probably you already know, but it's a good review of the different terminologies. But going back to the originally what I said was tendon versus ligament. When we have an injury and you have a muscle that gets injured, it's usually called a strain. And this is another bit of confusing terminology that it's important to get straight. You have a strain, it's a muscle. The muscle is strained. Ligaments, on the other hand, hold bones together. So you'll have ligaments between different bones. They are not contractile. They are just holding the structure in place. Okay. Now the ligaments, when you hurt a ligament, it's usually called a sprain. So if you say I have a sprained ankle, it means that you've torn one of the ligaments that are connecting between the bones, and it's usually as a result of a trauma. Generally speaking, when you have, say, a sprained ankle, sprained ankles don't occur in isolation. Oftentimes there's a muscle strain that goes with it, with a sprained ankle. When you have a break, a fracture, so for example, my son broke his ankle when he was skating. Well, that was a traumatic injury, and he cracked the end of the femur. And of course, other things get hurt. Of course, because of the impulse there, it wasn't just a break. There's a sprain there as well. The ligaments got stretched. Now there's first degree, second degree, third degree. A third degree would be a complete tear, rupture, the ligament gets pulled away from the bone. A first degree is just stretched, but it's not necessarily broken. And then in between is second, where there's some degree of rip. And obviously, a third degree takes a lot longer to heal than a first degree. So these are some terms you might hear your clients talk about. It may be related or unrelated to what they've come to see you about, but you want to be able to talk intelligently to them and understand the process of what's going on. Okay, so just as a review, movement and structure, skeleton is the structure, the muscles are the movement. In between, you've got the fascial linings, which help the muscles to glide smoothly. You've got injuries to those structures. You can have a fracture, which is the same thing as a break. People will say, well, I fractured a bone. Oh, did you break it or fracture it? It's the same thing. A fracture, a break, same thing. You can have a sprain, which is the tearing, either a full tear or partial tear of the ligament. And you can have a strain, which is an injury to the usually the belly of the muscle, but may affect the tendons. Okay. We'll talk more about some of the therapies later on, but just wanted to give you a good understanding. This is something you probably don't need to know in excruciating detail, but I just thought I would let you see the underlying what goes on, because this will feed us into how nutrition comes into play. So the top of the picture is a relaxed muscle, okay? And the relaxed muscle is longer, right? A contracted muscle is shorter. So when it's elongated, you've got these myosin strands in the middle that are out. They're extending the length of the muscle by being out. Now, they're not embedded within the actin fibers. If you look down below, you've got the actin, myosin, actin, myosin, actin, myosin, and the actin is actually pushed close together to make that distance shorter. Okay. What happens is, with energy in the form of ATP and calcium, there's an influx of calcium ions, which causes the shortening and contraction of the muscle. And then once you relax the muscle, the calcium ions flood out and there is no ATP really required. Well, actually, there is a little bit of ATP required for muscle relaxation. Calcium is very important for muscle contraction. So if you have a deficiency of calcium, you may not be able to get that complete muscle contraction. You may not have the strength of the muscle. But magnesium is super important for the relaxation. So sometimes when people say that they have muscle cramps, or when they contract a muscle, it's hard to get it to relax, or they have spasms in their muscle. Oftentimes you want to take a look at magnesium, because magnesium is often involved there. Again, I put a few extra slides in here, which I really don't want to go through in detail, but I wanted you to have them and see. So if this is something that's of interest, you can look more into it. This is actually what's occurring during contraction and relaxation, right? At the top, you've got this thing that looks like fingers. That's actually your nerve. And the conduction of the impulse comes along the nerve, goes out to the ends. Remember, we talked about the synapses between nerves. Well, there's also a place called the neuromuscular junction, which is basically it's a synapse between the nerve and the muscle. And the neurotransmitter that affects muscle contraction is acetylcholine. If you recall that from our neurotransmitter talks, acetylcholine is also important for memory. So various neurotransmitters have a variety of actions depending on where they go. So at that neuromuscular junction, acetylcholine is released and it binds to a receptor on the muscle. And then what's called an action potential occurs, which comes to the T-tubule. And what I showed you in the previous picture is the tubules. A flood of calcium ions get released. Then the actin and myosin fibers do their thing, that contraction happens, and they start to push towards each other. You'll see the arrows at the bottom. The actin fibers push towards the center, towards each other, and that's a contraction. Then when the muscle is told by the brain, right, to release, then again, the acetylcholine is going to be pulled back out of that synapse. And then the calcium ions are going to be pulled back out. And then the active sites are covered, which causes the muscle, the thing to go back together. Okay? And then the contraction ends, relaxation occurs. Magnesium flows into that, but it's not depicted in this diagram. So here's just active contraction, right? You can see in the first one, there's no movement, but there is a contraction, and that's an isometric. So an isometric contraction is when you tell the muscle to contract, or you put a force against it, but you don't allow movement. And so you get a contraction without actually moving. The tendon is not going to be pulling against the bone down across. A concentric contraction is a shortening of the muscle. So in an isometric, the muscle is not actually shortening and pulling on the tendon. In a concentric, it is, and that causes movement. And then an eccentric contraction is when you move it in the opposite direction. So you actually have to do something with the muscle to move it opposite, and you open up the joint. So those are other terms. So if you hear those, again, you can do that. This is a little bit more detail than we really need to go in, but if you want to study it further, this gives you an idea of how various things affect those actin and myosin fibers and the release of it, the need for ATP and the release back of ATP back into there. Let's look at how are you going to assess for issues with the musculoskeletal system. So what we have is, first of all, symptoms. If somebody says they have stiffness, they have pain, they have loss of range of motion, they can only move their joint just so far, they have weakness, they have fracture, they've had a traumatic injury, those are all things that would play in. On exam, you're going to look at their posture and alignment. You're also going to look for tender spots if you are doing exams, if that's part of your scope of practice. But you can also do these exams without actually having the person in front of you. I do these all the time. It takes some skill and some experience, but somebody will say, oh, my arm is this and I can't do that. I'll actually take them through an exam. Okay, let's lift it up. You know, lift it up here. When do you get pain? Touch it here. And I can oftentimes assess an injury and say, wow, it really sounds like you've got a frozen shoulder. You need to get that looked at. Or, oh, it sounds like you've got this happening. Why don't you just rub on the belly of that muscle and see if you can rub it out? Now, I've had a lot of experience with this, so I could do it. But you can get a general assessment of what might be going on, whether it could be a break. Of course, obviously, somebody has to have that checked. or whether it seems like it's ligamentous or muscular. So I'll give you a little hint on that. If you ask somebody, they say, well, when I move my arm, you know, when I bend my elbow, it hurts, and it hurts wherever it hurts. I'll say, okay, so what I want you to do is straighten your arm and then don't contract the muscle. Have somebody else bend the elbow for you and see. So if they have pain, when it's passively moved, meaning somebody else moves it, it's more likely to be a problem in the joint itself, a ligamentous or joint problem. But if they have a problem and it hurts only when they contract, and if somebody else moves it, there's no problem, most likely it's in the muscle because the muscle is the contractile unit, the muscle or the tendon. Other ways that you can assess bone density, you can assess via the DEXA scan. And it's usually a specific type of x-ray that's done over specific areas of the body. And they give you back very specific information that is related to the age, like how you compare with other people. There's a booklet that you're going to get, Eating for Bone Health Nutrition Guide. And it's got a lot of the information about these tests in a lot more detail. But basically the DEXA, they give you what's called a T score, and that compares you to a healthy 30-year-old. The Z score compares you to others your age. So because obviously osteoporosis is very common, if you're average for your age and you're 58, that's not a good thing, right? Because as people age, especially in our society where the diet is so poor and the nutrient imbalances are so rampant, if you're 58, you don't really want to be average for 58. It'd be nicer if you can be compared to being really close to a 30-year-old. So that's basically what those scores are. So if you see those numbers, and they're usually given in minuses, they should be pluses or zero, but they're given in minuses, how far off you are from that. So that's one of those. Now, in terms of lab tests, if you're looking at bone density, you really want to look at bone turnover. And there's two tests that allow you to look at bone turnover. Because if somebody has low bone density, but they've just started a diet and lifestyle thing where they're moving in the right direction, in other words, the bone is building faster than it's breaking down, they're in good shape at that point. They're actually in better shape than somebody who has a normal bone density, but when you do these functional tests, they're in bone breakdown because they're moving in the wrong direction. So I always often would say to my clients, I want to get you moving in the right direction. Yes, we want to know where you are, but the direction you're moving is more important than where you are, because if we're moving in the right direction, we're going to get your function moving back towards normal. But if you're moving in the opposite direction, hey, everything tests out okay, but you're breaking down bone, that's not a good thing. So there's the NTX urine, and then there's the DPD urine. The NTX is something you can generally order on your own. And Direct Labs used to have it, but they don't anymore. I don't know why, but they don't anymore. So you can go online. There's something called, I think it's Virginia Hopkins, where I've seen those tests. And you can order a kit, and you have the person take it home and they do their thing with it. I think it's usually done with the second urine of the day, send it back. The other thing is that I believe that Metametrics Genova has a bone turnover test as well, and Direct Labs. But these tests are available, whereas the DPD is usually only available through a doctor's office. It's similar to the NTX, but not quite the same, but usually they require that you have an MD ordering it for you. All right. So next on there, obviously vitamin D is super important, and you could add vitamin K to that. I've not really tested people for vitamin K, but I understand that that's a readily available test as well. D and K are super important for bone health, bone turnover, and repair after injury, right? If somebody has a fracture or some strain, you want to make sure that they have those nutrients. Parathyroid is another lab test that you can do. And the parathyroid are little glands, there's four of them, that sit in your neck, really very close to your thyroid, around the thyroid, and they control the degree of calcium absorption from the gut and into the bloodstream. And if the parathyroids are off, you may have all the vitamin D you need, and you may have all the calcium you need, but you're not going to get good bone health because the parathyroid controls the absorption of that calcium and the utilization of that calcium. You can test calcium, but calcium in the blood is oftentimes going to be pretty normal, pretty standard, because it's so vital for contraction of the heart that it's a last ditched effort. If your body, if that goes off, it's really, you've got somebody who's pretty close to leaving us. But ionized calcium is a good test, and it's not done all that often. It's a special test that if you see somebody with a high parathyroid come back, you want to check for ionized calcium. And also, if they have some other issues, like if their calcium is high, their regular calcium is high, testing for high ionized calcium is a good deal as well. You can do 24-hour urine calcium. That's going to be more telling than just the calcium in the blood, because there's so much that goes into, so many resources in the body that go into maintaining that. Other things that are important are thyroid tests. If you have excess thyroid hormone, that can lead to bone loss. So if somebody is hyperthyroid, obviously they're going to have problems. That one of the problems is osteoporosis. So that's something to be looked at. But even if they're getting to be high normal, and even if TSH is suppressed, very suppressed because you're taking external hormones, that can lead to osteoporosis as well. So what else? Cortisol and DHEA. Ooh, cortisol actually is not a friend to muscle or bone. It causes a thinning of the muscle and the bone. So if somebody's under a lot of stress, you run an ASI, an adrenal stress index test, and you find out that their cortisol is high, that person's at risk for osteoporosis, but also for injuries that don't heal. And it could be skin lesions, et cetera, that don't heal too, because that high cortisol interrupts the functioning of our structural tissues. Okay. And then low DHEA can lead to bone loss. So if you're running your ASIs and you see somebody whose DHA just isn't coming up, I mean, it is important to give them a DHEA supplement if need be. If you're doing all the other pieces and that's not working, don't be afraid of going very slowly with supplemental DHEA, because low DHEA can lead to bone loss, and you don't want to put people at that risk. As you know, C-reactive protein is a measure of inflammation in the body. And inflammation can cause problems with all the contractile tissues, with the muscles, and with the bone. So C-reactive protein, good thing to look at. Homocysteine is a good thing to test for. And when the homocysteine goes above 8-ish, then that's a problem. So you want to keep the homocysteine, look for homocysteines 8 or below. I like to look for them in the 5 range, but once they get above 8, it starts to have a negative effect on the bone. Of course, we have gluten sensitivity and celiac, because we know those antibodies can affect bone health. And I personally like the stool test, but you can do whatever test you feel most comfortable with there. And finally, sex hormone tests, because estrogen progesterone imbalances can be problematic. Looking at the metabolites as well and the ratios between the 2s and the 16s is super important. If you recall that on the estrogen testing, the ratio between the 2s and the 16s, if that goes too high, there's too much 2 in relation to 16, you put the person's at risk of bone loss. But on the other hand, if the 16 is high in comparison to the 2, they're at risk of breast cancer. So that's not one of the things you look at and say more is better. You want to look for the just right in that area. Okay. And then, of course, low testosterone can contribute to bone loss as well. So those are the tests for the musculoskeletal system. So let's start to look at how we can affect them, how you can counsel people to keep their bones and their muscles and their structural tissues strong. So some of the things that can weaken the musculoskeletal system, high salt. It seems that high salt intake contributes to urinary calcium loss. So it's not saying that salt is bad. Excess salt is bad. Not enough salt is bad too. So finding that right intake, and it seems to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 2,300 milligrams a day make you at risk. And for every 2,300 milligrams of sodium, you can lose about 40 milligrams of calcium. So over time, that can build up. It's not much if you just, occasionally have a high salt meal. But if somebody is in eating a lot of processed foods and salting like crazy, it can be contributing to calcium loss. The soft drinks contain phosphoric acid, and in the non-diet ones contain sugar. The phosphoric acid, it gets the calcium phosphorus ratio out of balance, which leads to bone loss. The sugar depletes your B vitamins, amongst many other things. So soft drinks are not a good idea. With caffeine, It said that 6 milligrams of calcium are lost with every cup of coffee. Well, again, that doesn't seem like a lot, but somebody over time is drinking, you know, a lot of people drink 3 or 4 cups of coffee a day. So watching the caffeine intake is important and in terms of preventing calcium loss and bone loss. Alcohol blocks mineral absorption in general. So calcium, boron, magnesium, zinc, alcohol gets in the way of that mineral absorption. It disrupts stomach acid functioning. So alcohol is not a friend to a healthy musculoskeletal system. Of course, our good old friends, hydrogenated, heated, and oxidized oils, they destroy vitamin K and they cause the formation of free radicals, which can damage everything. It's not just related to the musculoskeletal system. Sugar, as we said, will deplete calcium and B vitamins, but it also can increase the levels of cortisol. There's a researcher named Yudkin. So if you ever go in and look at a lot of the research on sugar and refined carbs, Yudkin did it. And he was the first to really say, hey, the fat isn't as important in heart disease as is the sugar intake. And there's a lot of papers by Yudkin. And he basically said that the cortisol, when you get stressed out, you have somebody getting stressed out and releasing cortisol, it has the same effect as taking cortisone on thinning the bones. So sugar is going to increase. So 100 grams of sugar is going to increase the production of cortisol, which is why people feel temporarily good when they eat the sugar. But it's also going to cause a problem with the thinning of the bones as a result of the cortisol. We also know that the problem with the excess cortisol is blood sugar balance as well. Gluten has been found to help to break down your bones. There's several studies that show a very strong correlation between bone loss and gluten sensitivity. It's partially related to the inflammatory process that happens as a result of gluten in the small intestine and the resultant lack of absorption of other minerals and nutrients. But also, it's very acid forming. If you look at an acid alkaline chart, you're going to find all your gluten grains on the acid side. When your body becomes more acidic in a reaction to try to keep the blood on the alkaline side, right, 7.35 to 7.45, so when you're eating foods that are more acidic, it's going to cause your body to try to maintain that balance, and it looks for stores of alkaline minerals. And where does it go? The musculoskeletal system. It's a great reservoir. Okay, so anything that's on that acid side should be watched. Refined grains. Grains are, again, most grains are going to be on the acid side of the chart, but also refined grains have had their micronutrients depleted and pulled out. And when you eat them, they're going to be pulling on your stores of these other nutrients. And we look in a few minutes at what nutrients are actually required for healthy muscles and bones. You're going to see how important this is. Dairy products, they have high protein, which interferes with. They also have high calcium, but you don't get a lot of the calcium out of it because the excess protein is very acidic and it causes the body to try to neutralize. And the phosphorus, the calcium-phosphorus balance in dairy is way out of whack. So you really don't get a whole lot of the calcium out of dairy and it can be depleting. Excessive protein. So if you're trying one of these super high protein diets and you're not eating a lot of plant foods to go with it, these people who are on, like, say, the Atkins diet, where they're just eating bacon and meat all day long and they're not balancing it with vegetables, that can be leaching calcium from their bones. Well, we know the nightshades consist of things like eggplant, tomatoes, potatoes, cayenne, various peppers, and they're yummy foods. And they're not problematic for everyone. But in people who are sensitive to nightshades, they can cause inflammation and arthritic changes. So if you're working with somebody and they're talking about joint pains, that they have a lot of joint pains, you might try a trial of getting them off of nightshades for a couple of weeks, seeing how they feel. For the most part, they feel good, but then they don't really believe it. So then you have them reintroduce, and you'll see that they get much worse when they introduce the nightshades back. And then lastly on foods and nutrients is vitamin A. My vitamin A is super important nutrient, but it's found that 5,000 IUs a day or more, there's an increased fracture risk. In fact, it's like double the amount of fracture risk in people whose intake of vitamin A is more in the range of 1,600. Yeah, so it's double the fracture rate. So there's a lot of good nutrients that are going to support bone health and muscle health, But if you have too much or you have imbalances, you're going to see problems. So this is where you want to start looking with your clients. So let's look at some of the nutrients that are important for muscle health. And then we'll look at the ones for bone health. And I have some really good charts in a handout that you will get. And that's the one I was telling you about before, the eating for bone health. And I've got a grid and it has the amounts and everything. But for now, let's look at what's important for muscle health. Well, remember we said that ATP is required for muscle contraction. So you have to have a decent amount of carbohydrates or some sort of fuel. So you need to be able to feed the Krebs cycle. Okay. So carbohydrates or protein and protein. Protein's required for the structural matrix of the bone and the muscles. That's an important one. And of course, water, because you need to be well hydrated in order for the muscles to be healthy. The specific nutrients that you want to look at your clients when they're having issues with muscles or just in general to make sure that their muscles are going to be strong. You've got potassium, and potassium and sodium are important for the contraction and relaxation. Iron, which is important for carrying energy, the hemoglobin, to the muscles to help them to be able to do their thing. You've got myoglobin, which is part of the muscles, and iron is an important part of the myoglobin as well. You've got zinc. Zinc is important for the synthesis of DNA and protein activity, which helps the muscles to contract and to rebuild. And so it's good for growth and repair. So if somebody has an injury and they're not healing well, they may have low zinc status, and that's preventing them from actually healing. And then copper. And copper, it needs to be in balance with zinc. So if somebody is taking some zinc, you want to make sure that they have a little bit of copper to balance that out. Copper is an easier one to get. They like macadamia nuts. That's one of the food sources that I think about for copper because it's got a really decent amount. Biotin, super important, especially biotin is important for that structural matrix. And it's really important in nutrient for hair as well as for muscle. Riboflavin, vitamin B2, important in the Krebs cycle. Vitamin B12, important for, like iron, for the synthesis, enough red blood cell metabolism, hemoglobin. And then, of course, vitamin C. Vitamin C is important for collagen repair. Vitamin C is important for inflammation when somebody gets injured. So there's a lot of reasons for all these nutrients. And we give you more information in the handout. These are the nutrients for bone health. So I'm not going to go into each one of these in detail because I've given you an extensive handout. It's a chart. It's a two-page chart with each of these listed and what they do in relationship to bone health and then what the ranges are. What I will say is a lot of people think that all you have to do is take a calcium supplement to have good bone health. And that can't be further from the truth. There's about 20 nutrients, as you can see. Calcium, boron, chromium, copper, magnesium, manganese, phosphorus, potassium, silica. Silica is, I like to use the whole foods for silica, and horsetail and nettles are super high in silica. Protein, of course, protein is important for any structural tissue. Omega-3 fats, super important to maintain that balance, maintain the inflammatory balance. Probiotics, super important. We find that if the gut is out of balance, then there are byproducts, toxic byproducts that get into the system and affect bone health. Strontium, super important nutrient. Zinc, vitamin A, B12, vitamin B6, vitamin C, vitamin D, and vitamin K. All of these are super important. The ones you might hear about are calcium, vitamin D, vitamin K, and strontium, or the ones that your clients may come in and say, hey, I'm on a bone formula. These are the things that are in it. But those are not the only ones. Bone supplementation guidelines. I picked a few of the top ones. Like I said, in my handout that you've got, you'll have more of these. So you don't have to memorize these over time. Some of them you may, but these are some of the bone supplementation guidelines. Magnesium, between 5 and 10 milligrams. Potassium, bicarbonate, if they need the extra supplementation, it could be 100 upwards to 200 to 300 milligrams, depending on what their need is. And a lot of that has to do with how active they are, how much sweating they're doing, et cetera, and how well they are following acid alkaline guidelines and keeping themselves more in alkaline lifestyle. Vitamin D3, the range can be enormous, anywhere from 1,000 up to 20,000. I've put people on a 20,000 when their vitamin D levels on their blood tests come back really low. Vitamin K2, again, 50 to 1,000. It's just, there's so many things that go into it. I'm giving you ranges so that you know when you're working with somebody and they say, well, I'm already taking vitamin K, and you're thinking, you might need vitamin K. You look to see how much they're taking, and you can tweak them and try to find the optimal for them. Boron is between 3 and 9, strontium between 600 and 700 milligrams, zinc between 10 and 30 milligrams. Although I've put people on higher doses of zinc when I've looked at their 24-hour urine steroid panel and found that they have some problems with the enzymes and with the metabolites. So 10 to 30 is a safe range, but know that sometimes you need to go up to 60 or even 90 for them. Copper, about 0.9, easy to get. Manganese, 2.3 for men and 1.8 for women. Silicon, 12. And then vitamin C, anywhere from 1 to 3,000 is a kind of a published dose, but you know how to do bowel tolerance. And I believe, especially when you're working with somebody who has some chronic musculoskeletal problems or even acute musculoskeletal problems, that you go with the vitamin C to bowel tolerance. So the top bone-building foods. Prunes may strike you as an odd one to be at the top of my list, but there was a researcher several years ago, I don't recall his name, but he did some awesome research. His name is Bahram Armandi, A-R-J-M-A-N-D-I. He's a PhD, and he discovered this thing about prunes. So he did a study, he did a three-year study with people, put them on 10 prunes a day. And he was able to double people's bone density. People that had obviously had low bone density. It's not going to hurt somebody if they have already normal. But it actually brought people's bone densities into normal range. And it was about 9 to 10 prunes a day. So leafy green vegetables, of course, they're one of my top bone building foods because they're so loaded with all those nutrients. That long list we just looked at, green leafy vegetables have majority of those in abundant quantities. The seeds that tend to be good sources of bone-building nutrients, chia seeds, pumpkin seeds, and sesame. Sesame tend to be high in calcium, pumpkin tend to be high in zinc, and chia has a plethora of nutrients for bone development. Almonds are another one. Sea vegetables, especially kelp. Good old avocado. I love my avocado. It's considered one of the top bone-building foods, so get people eating that. Cruciferous vegetables, especially things like broccoli and cauliflower and kale, they all tend to be really good sources for bone building. Figs tend to be good for bone building. Not quite as good as prunes, but they do have some good properties. They're high in calcium. And then black beans, because they are high in calcium and they're a good source of protein. So those are some of the foods that I like for bone building. These are some of my favorite herbs: nettles, horsetail, alfalfa. I'll have people take a teaspoon of each of those, which comes out to be a tablespoon, or two. So depending on where they're at. I love using herbs to build bones. I've had people who have gone and done their tests, their osteoporosis tests, or bone density tests. Doctor wants to put them on Fosamax, and they don't want to do it. And they say, what can I do nutritionally? So I'll put them on some of these herbs. I love nettles, horsetail, and alfalfa. I don't know why I gravitated to those three. I think it's because David Winston, one of my herbal mentors, found that combination to be awesome. Oat straw is another one that's awesome with that. I haven't used much in the way of red raspberry, peppermint, and red clover, but if you were to make a formula, I think that's actually all the things that are in David Winston's bone, I think it's called OsteoMend formula. And people can take it in a capsule, but his point and mine too is like, why not just get them to eat the food? It's a lot less expensive. You can buy a pound of each of these herbs for $10 on Mountain Rose. I usually do combination of nettles, horsetail, alfalfa, but like I said, oat straw would be a good combination as well. And I'll usually put a total of 2 tablespoons if somebody's trying to reverse their osteoporosis, and mix it in smoothies, mix it in soups, sprinkle it on top of veggies. There is some issue with horsetail. You need to infuse it, or otherwise it can antagonize vitamin B1. So if you are using horsetail in just throwing it in your smoothies, you may want to make sure that you're taking extra thiamine, vitamin B1. So those are the herbs. I love it. They taste fine. What a lot of people want to do is do an infusion and just drink the infusion. I caution people, and I'll tell you that is what you need to do is actually use the pulp as well. And that's what I learned from David Winston too, is that a lot of people throw away a good percentage of the calcium because it doesn't get infused out of the pulp. So even if you are making an infusion, you can drink the infusion as a tea, or you can infuse overnight. And infusing means you boil the water, you pour it over the herbs, let it sit overnight. The next day, use the liquid as the base for your smoothie. Dump all the leaves in there as well. That'll give you some extra fiber. It'll also give you some of the extra calcium. And then throw the other ingredients in for your elixirs or smoothies. So it's a great thing to use with your clients who are either already have decreased bone density, in which case I would go with the full, you know, couple of tablespoons a day, or people who are entering that menopausal stage of their life where it's common for the bone density to go down. But just as a preventative for people who are younger, they may not need to do it every day, but doing it on a regular basis to keep their bones strong, in addition to the other nutrients and foods that we've already talked about. I'm just a big fan of using real food. I have found that when you put into place good bone building protocols, you can see changes in 6 months. You don't want to do it any sooner than 6 months, because before 6 months, you just won't see the changes on the x-ray. You have to have some specific changes for it to show up. But 6 months is great. And then maybe do the bone turnover thing in between or before that to make sure that you're on there, like the NTX. So if you start somebody on a good program, maybe have them do that for a month, do an NTX to see if they're actually in the right range, either that or the Metametrix bone turnover test, and then just see where they're at. And if they're not going in the right direction, then you want to really look and revamp their test rather than waiting 6 full months to see. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the conditions and injuries later. I want to go into some things for supporting teeth, hair, and nails. So healthy skin tips, skin, teeth, hair, and nails. So this is in general. Skin is part of your structure. We won't spend a whole lot of time on it, but a lot of the basic stuff that you teach people is super important for skin. If somebody's coming in, they say they have really dry skin or it's flaky, and before you jump to the conclusion that they have a thyroid issue, make sure they're doing some of these basics, like hydration is super important. If somebody's going around drinking 2 cups of water a day, they're not going to be hydrated enough. Their skin is going to show it. Nutrient-dense, high-water content foods with lots of greens. That's why the daily green smoothies, green soups are super important. Green juices, super important for healthy skin. I find that some people who do the green cleanse, after 3 or 4 days on a green cleanse, they'll say, my God, my skin hasn't looked this good in years. My husband's commenting about how smooth and glowing my skin looks. Moving and sleeping and staying away from stress are super important for your skin. It's important for everything, right? You've got to eliminate toxins. How do you do that? Well, you sweat during exercise. You've got to repair. How do you do that? Well, when you sleep. You got to keep those cortisol levels down because it messes everything up. It ages you prematurely. How do you do that? De-stress, transforming stress, heart math. A good thing for skin and also overall for detoxification is dry skin brush every morning. Use only pure skincare products. Okay, there are a number of them out on the market that are just made with lots of herbs and good oils. Some of those products, the skincare products, are just, they're brutal. They're just not good for you overall. They're not good for your skin. They're also not good for your liver. Think happy thoughts and affirmations, because when you're negative and fearful, that's going to affect the health of your skin. And of course, sunshine and fresh air, plenty of vitamin D, plenty of good circulation. So that's just the general stuff. Good for hair, good for skin. This is stuff that's going to be good for pretty much everything on your body. So what are some of the nutrients to have that long, beautiful, luxurious skin, hair, and nails? So on hair, a lot of people find that when their thyroid or adrenals are wonked, they start to lose hair, clumps of hair in the drain. So addressing adrenal issues, addressing stress issues, addressing things like gluten intolerance and autoimmunity and selenium deficiencies and all the things we've talked about related to adrenals and thyroid, right? Hydration, again, becomes super important. Silica, super important. Horsetail, great source of, as well as bamboo. There's now some new supplements that are coming out that are silica from bamboo. I haven't used them. Diatomaceous earth, very inexpensive. You got to be careful and make sure it's food grade diatomaceous earth. Some people have problems taking it. They think it's yucky or they're nervous about it. That's okay. Have them stick to horsetail and the bamboo capsules. You can also get a tincture, liquid silica. And colloidal silver is actually a good source of silica. So it's good for your immune system, colloidal silver is, but it's also a good source of silica. Iron. Iron supports the hair follicles. You want to make sure that you have good, solid hair follicles, and iron is your energy. It's going to be supporting turnover, skin turnover, because it helps with keeping the hemoglobin levels up. Really, one of my favorite ways to support iron is an herb called yellow dock. I've had people get their iron levels in their blood doubled in 6 weeks by doing a tincture of yellow dock. So keep that in mind. You don't have to just put people on isolated supplements. Zinc, of course, is important for hair follicles, for tissue growth, and overall hormonal imbalance, which affects the skin, hair, and nails. So things like pumpkin seeds and cashews, even chia seeds are good sources. Vitamin D will activate hair growth, will activate the follicles in the skin, just activates growth in general. Vitamin D helps maintain healthy membranes. You've also got protein, right? Like everything else, it's structure. Protein is important for collagen, and this is important for your hair. Nourishment for your teeth. A couple of years ago, I did an interview on my radio show with Nadine Artemis, and she's really studied the natural care of teeth. She even had, I think there was even a tooth summit. I don't know if she did it or she did it in conjunction with someone else. But basically, important of teeth. Teeth are part of your skeletal structure, right? So, of course, you need an alkaline diet. An acidic diet is going to drain away your minerals. You want to make sure there's no sugar and no fruit juices for healthy teeth. Otherwise, that plaque builds up on the gums because those bacteria love sugar and fruit juices. All of the nutrients for healthy bones apply to teeth. Okay, so if you've got somebody who's having issues with teeth, make sure that their bone nutrients are set, that they're good. And they just thought this was funny because I happened to find this picture of somebody chewing on celery. But if you're out and you don't have a toothbrush with you and you've eaten, rather than letting the food sit in your teeth until you can get home and brush, chew on celery. Celery is kind of a natural toothbrush. It's really cool. So I'm going to show you a few of the resources from Nadine Artemis, and I'll give you the link. I would just go to her page and take a look at this. But this is her 8-step process for healthy gums and teeth. And she does things like salt water rinses. So that's good for healthy teeth. It helps to keep infectious processes down and kills off the plaque that grows in the mouth that can cause tooth decay. Scraping the tongue, super important. Just get the gunk that builds up on the tongue and allow it to breathe. Brushing, she uses these specific formulas that she put together, but basically they're herbs. Like there's some tea tree in there, there's spearmint, there's peppermint, there's lemon oil, and you can look at her site and see. You can buy the combinations. You can get a peppermint oil tooth product, really good, and you can brush the gums and the teeth, and you can also put these oils on your floss so it gets down into the crevices and keeps things really clean. Okay, so she has this whole process where it's multiple flossing, multiple brushing. It takes about 10 or 15 minutes to do. So it may not be something you're going to do twice a day, but the whole process is a really good idea to do once a day. And you can send your clients, or you can go to the link here, dradamarie.com/go/livinglibations. And this is a copy of the front of her book. She has a really good book, which everything is described in. And it's not a bad idea, especially if you are dealing with a population of either young kids where they tend to have a lot of dental decay, or older population where the teeth are starting to bear the brunt of a long life of abuse. So those are some good teeth resources for you. And let's take a look at some therapeutics now. We've established how the musculoskeletal system works. We've looked at the nutrients that play into giving you strong muscles, strong bones, strong teeth, strong hair. So let's have a look at some of the therapies that you can apply and why. So let's just review. Maintaining a healthy musculoskeletal system requires great nutrition, avoidance of those things that break it down, and inclusion of those things that build it up. Stress management, right? Because we already talked about the role of cortisol and how cortisol can be damaging to collagen tissue. The role of sleep, super important to be able to repair and have healthy muscles and skeleton and skin and hair and teeth and nails. Exercise, okay? importance of that. But also beyond that, we can look at things like massage and trigger point therapy, manipulation, physical therapy modalities. Now, you may not have those within your scope of practice, but knowing about them so that when you're talking to somebody, you can provide truly holistic care doesn't mean that you have to do it all. But you should be able to tell when somebody's talking to you about a particular injury, a particular area of spasm, that you can appropriately refer them to adjunctive practitioners. So let's look at some of these processes and some of the things that you can do. Going back to nutrition, I just want to really emphasize when you're working with people who have had injuries, there are three pieces that you want to be working on to help them to heal from injuries. One is the inflammation that occurs as a result of the injury. Inflammation is important to allow the healing to begin, but oftentimes because people are out of balance in terms of their nutrients and their omega-3 fats, they just tend to stay inflamed for a long time and they don't heal properly. So really helping them with anti-inflammatory nutrients, an anti-inflammatory diet, an alkaline diet, and nutrients like ginger, turmeric, quercetin, and other bioflavonoids, but also the enzymes, the proteolytic enzymes, super important. The other piece beyond the inflammation is spasm. Usually when people have musculoskeletal injuries or they have musculoskeletal complaints, they'll talk about stiffness in the neck, stiffness in the shoulder joint, inability to have full range of motion. So if you work on spasm in the muscles, of course, that's the balance between calcium and magnesium. And a lot of people have thrown off that balance because they hear calcium, 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 and they're taking a ton of calcium, but they're not balancing it with magnesium. So magnesium is super important. You can take oral magnesium. You can give them liquid magnesium. You can even have them do topical magnesium. Topical tends to be really good for musculoskeletal stuff. They rub it into their muscle. So we've got the inflammation and the muscle spasm, but you also have repair. Repair is super important that you make sure that their nutrition is going to support them actually repairing. So it goes back to many things that we've talked about all along, right? Having proper blood sugar balance. When you've got too much insulin in the system because of eating a high carb diet, the growth hormone tends to go down. Growth hormone is super important for repairing and building strong musculoskeletal system tissue. So that's an important piece of it. There's other things like looking at the minerals for repair, like calcium, magnesium, strontium, things like that, that build strong bones, and looking at helping them to supplement for those. There's some homeopathic formulas which are helpful for people when they're repairing from bony injuries. And we'll look at a concept called trigger points. We're again going to detail. I'm introducing you to this. Janet Travell she must be 100 by now if she's even still alive, but she wrote a 2-volume set called Trigger Point, Myofascial Therapy. And it's basically the concept of having points on the person's body, which when they press on them, refer to other points. So in this particular case, you'll see the picture with the X. You can press on the X and they'll have referred pain down. So the X is right above the elbow. They'll have referred pain into their forearm. You have a couple of other X's in the back of the arm depicted there, which can refer up into the neck or down into the hand. So keeping in mind that just because they complain about a particular pain in a particular location, that doesn't mean that that's where the problem is. So knowing about trigger point therapy is awesome. There's the Janet Travell books, but there's also a book. It's a layperson's guide to trigger points. I was actually introduced to this book by one of my patients because we were doing this trigger point work. We were getting really good results, but she could only come in once a week. And really this stuff needs once a day for a while. So she found this book and she brought it in. She goes, I've been doing this ever since and I'm getting way better. So this is called the Trigger Point Therapy Workbook. I have the second edition. I don't know if there's more out there. It's by Claire Davies, C-L-A-I-R. Davies. Claire Davies. I got it on Amazon for $15. Good book. It's helpful for you to have if this isn't something that's your expertise, because then when people start talking, you can, like I said, truly holistic care, say, oh, why don't you go get this book and look at here. This shows patterns of where your pains might be and how you can correct it. And it talks about self-care. So it's a really important concept. So you'll see this picture shows you specific areas they may have pain. what muscles might be involved. So this muscle called the subclavius, which sits right below the scapula, refers all the way down into the arm. The serratus anterior in the chest goes down into the arm as well. That pectoralis minor muscle, which is up in the chest, that can refer all across the chest, but down into the arm. This is important to keep in mind when somebody is saying they've had chest pain. And a lot of folks don't know about this. I worked with a patient once. She had spent $10,000 on various doctors and various invasive procedures, MRIs, CT scans, PET scans, etc., because they thought she had a heart problem because of the location of her pain. We found it was trigger point referral. And within three treatments, the pain was gone. So you can be a real hero when it comes to this stuff. Right? Somebody may have pain in their abdomen that you're thinking, oh, is it their intestine? It could be their psoas muscle, which is underneath all the intestinal stuff that is attaches to the front part of your vertebrae in the back and then to the femur in the leg. Okay. So just understanding this, that book, the layperson's book, is an awesome book. The other thing to keep in mind when it comes to structural care is their spinal alignment. Chiropractors and osteopaths are trained to keep the bones in alignment of the spine. You've got coming out of each and every level of the spine in this little area, there's little holes you'll see to the side of each of the vertebrae. That's what's called a foramen. And that foramen has the nerve roots coming out that go to supply the organs, the glands, the muscles, the skin. So if somebody's having a problem and their spine is all out of whack, there can be pressure put on those nerves, and then they can have problems in other parts of their body. I remember a story that was told when I was in chiropractic school about somebody with diabetes, that they just weren't responding to anything, and they found some spinal misalignments, they call them subluxations, started to adjust those and address those, and gradually their diabetes got better without, you know, they'd already done all the dietary changes. So it's kind of interesting. I wanted to show you a little bit better referral. If somebody's complaining about pain in particular areas of the body and they haven't had an injury and you're wondering why, you'll see on this page marked where the different vertebrae refer pain. One clear example of this is something called shingles. You've probably heard of it, herpes zoster. And people, it's a very painful, burning kind of a pain, and it's usually along a nerve root distribution. And it's usually because there's a viral infection that's embedded itself in that particular nerve root level. And a lot of times, manual manipulation, in addition to nutrition to help calm that viral infection down, can be wondrous. So this is just a referral chart. There's probably many more and better ones if you were to go searching through the internet. Again, this is small to read on the slide itself, but when you print it out, make sure you at least print this one full, because this is good to refer to. What you'll see is that it lists the levels of the spine, and then it lists the various areas in the body that nerve root supplies. So, for example, T10 related to kidneys. If somebody's having some issues with kidney problems, you better make sure that they can get to a chiropractor and get their T10 aligned. Important stuff. So this musculoskeletal stuff is important in and of itself, but it's also important in what it does. So when you find somebody has a problem, I just threw in this example, people get freaked out sometimes when they see neck adjustments, but I mean, they're easy to do. I've been trained obviously to do them. And the relief that people get is phenomenal. You've had kids with ear infections because their upper cervicals are misaligned. You get that flowing, the lymph starts to drain, the ear infections go away. Some dramatic things, tinnitus can go away, some traumatic things. So keeping an open mind about getting people to get their bones put back in place, which is more than just about putting their bones in place. I personally don't ever just adjust someone. I work on their muscles as well, so that they don't have to keep getting adjusted until the muscle decides to give up. The muscles go into spasm, they're going to pull things out of alignment. So when you're talking to people about this, you might want to explain that. We talked about things for injuries. We talked about pain, spasm, and inflammation. You know, we talked about the structural stuff, the anti-inflammatory herbs and nutrients like ginger and turmeric and quercetin and other things for arthritis. We talked about can very well be related to autoimmune disease, but it can also be related to nightshade sensitivity. It can be related to gut problems, food sensitivities. There's a lot of things that can go into arthritic type symptoms. So it's really important to dig with people and not just say, oh, you have arthritis. And what are you doing about it? Oh, okay, that's nice. To really know that there are things that you can offer. Autoimmune diseases, which can affect every part of the body, but autoimmune diseases that affect the collagen tissue in particular, or things like lupus, which affects the nucleus of the cells, have problems. We all already know, you've been through a lot on how to work with those. Obviously, osteoporosis, there's a picture of a healthy bone on the left, and on the right, you see that it just looks porous, right? There's more open spaces in there. The bone is actually becoming more spongy and porous, and it's because it's demineralizing. And a lot of, you know, straight Western medical practitioners will tell you, you can't reverse osteoporosis. But we're finding that's not true, that you can reverse osteoporosis, and you can do it with nutrition and diet and lifestyle. Infection in the bones, infection in the muscles, or infection in other parts of your body which compromise the nutritional status. So these are things to look at. The infections can be related to a gut infection, which then affects the absorption of the nutrients and then can affect the musculoskeletal system. Hair loss, we talked about. Yes, it can be nutrient imbalances and nutrients that are important for the follicles like iron, but it can also be related to thyroid and adrenal. So you want to make sure that you're looking at those things. Brittle nails can be a zinc deficiency, can be an iron deficiency, can be a protein deficiency. People used to take gelatin to grow their nails because gelatin has a good amino acid profile. Now, if you're vegetarian, you're not going to want to take in gelatin, but that's the idea. There's other ways that you can get protein, but protein's important for nails. And then finally, tooth decay, which we talked about earlier. Too much sugar in the diet, not enough of the bone remineralizing nutrients, and that process that I gave you for helping with that. So that's about it for our musculoskeletal system. I hope this was useful. Again, it was just intended to give you an overview of how the musculoskeletal system fits in with our functional approach that we've been using and how it fits in with diet and lifestyle choices.